You're listening to DraftKings Network.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
Mark Mangino had to.
Mangino had to be pushing four legs.
You think?
Well, I never told the story on the air, right? That Mangino couldn't wipe his ass. He had to take a shower.
How would you know that?
Dan, that's
a good question, Christopher.
Gets hearsay from 20 years ago, and he pulls it as fact. We saw this with the Phil Knight thing yesterday, and he's like reporting it as like it's still the case. I think he still has Mark Mangino needing a shower in his office.
He might. Mark Mangino still goes to the Kansas office every time he takes a shit, so that he could take a shower immediately afterward. He would used to knock Les Miles out of the way and be like, just come thundering in to use the shower.
What would be the alternate technique if you couldn't reach back there? Would you have to like put like a wipe on a pole or something?
A pole.
I mean, a shower, no? Like, that's what I'm saying. He had to shower to wash his ass.
There should be some sort of invention, though. It can't just be a straight pole. It's got to be a curvy pole that you could just kind of wrap around. And,
like a selfie stick?
Yeah.
Or a bidet.
Yeah.
It's been around for a while.
Or a wet towel. The former Strikers coach, Cor Vanderhaart, an old Dutchman, used to wipe his ass.
How do you know this? Because back in that day.
The last time your dad did any reporting was when he was
last time he asked any questions.
That locker room.
Any question.
Listen, after a Strikers game, Cor Vanderhaart would be nude while giving the post-game press conference, and he would take a towel and go back and forth like this on his ass.
He would floss. He would floss it right underneath, right between the legs. He would floss.
God rest his soul, by the way. Core. Rotten to the core, said the sign when they wanted him out. That's a quick aside. I got another aside, by the way. I don't even know if we're recording or not. I never know.
Doesn't matter.
But
keep aside.
Anybody in the room heard of Cuba Gooding?
Yes, of course. Yes.
No, okay. No.
I know. I'm more familiar with his son.
Yeah. Well, Cuba Gooding Jr., of course. Cuba's dad died of very strange circumstances 2 or 3 years ago. You could look that up. And here's the thing. Cuba Gooding Sr. Was a famous singer in the 1970s whose group, The Main Ingredient, had a huge hit with Everybody Plays the Fool. And that was Cuba Gooding Sr.'s voice on that song.
What does that have to do with what we were talking
about?
It's an aside.
He's setting aside.
But what is it?
It's a good song, though.
Quick aside, I thought it was like tangentially related
to what you were talking about. The aside has to be about what you were talking about. It's not just something completely off to the side. No, it doesn't have to be completely off to the side. It has to be adjacent. It has to have some sort of.
That's an aside. I think it's an aside.
It's
more like a tangent.
It's an unrelated note. It's an unrelated note. It's not an aside.
A tangent. Roy's got it right when he says it's a tangent. If you're just going to say something that doesn't have anything to do whatsoever with what it is that came before it.
I lead the league in non sequiturs.
Basic trigonometry there. It's a tangent.
Thank you, Roy.
You're welcome.
Chris Whittingham has done the useless sound montage for Billy Gill. I don't know if this is sacrilege. This is him kneeling humbly at the altar created by a vacationing Billy Gill and trying to give you people the thing that you crave, even if it has to be a little diluted because Peaky Blinders back there doesn't quite have the same ear for cliche and useless sound that Billy Gill does.
Downton Abbey.
Let's go ahead and play the useless sound montage.
It's a game of inches. You saw the Al Pacino speech and then you give him Sunday, right? There you go. That's football.
Good, bad, indifferent, whatever it is. And, you know, that whole football game comes down to one play at the end.
We got to make more plays, got to take advantage of the opportunities in front of us, and got to make sure that we capitalize on opportunities.
Our job for our quarterback is to get us in the end zone.
We feel like we're not playing our best football. We have spurts where we're really good, and we have spurts where we kind of have these we're not scoring. We're not finding ways to finish drives. So definitely as a competitor, you want to be better.
Thought we did a lot of good things offensively. That drive at the end of the first half was really good. We just didn't finish it.
It's part of being a backup quarterback. You got to stay prepared and be ready for whenever your number gets called.
You win football games, you win football games at the end of the day.
If you're results-oriented all the time, then you're just looking at the scoreboard. You're spending your life up there. So there's a process to what we try to do. There's a process to improving every day.
We're all dialed in. Stayed zoned in on what the task was. Nobody blinked. You know, that's why I think we were able to win this game.
Field goals, they're not going to win your games. You know, you got to get touchdowns.
Appreciative of the Ravens, man. It takes two to tango. They bring the best out in us.
It's all the attitude. I watch these guys come out to practice and, you know, they're 100 miles an hour.
We have a saying in there, man, not too high, not too low. Man of wisdom avoids all extremes. Have some fun. Enjoy yourself. Get some rest, but use good hygiene. You know, just do all those things. Just be smart and, you know, do the right thing.
What? Difficult loss. Bit of a tale of two halves. You know, dug ourselves whole early.
Those moments, it gets thick. We don't need to be discovering ourselves and figuring out what we need to run at those moments. And so they can communicate and do the things that you need them to do when that air gets thick.
There's no flinch. It's the NFL. The teams are good. You know, they're going to come back and they're going to do everything they can to get back in the game. And we have to do our best to limit that.
Marvelous job of just hanging.
You know, everyone in there is resilient. Everyone in there is a warrior.
It is what it is. It's good to come on the road, play in these environment and against a tough team and get a win.
Horrific by me. Horrific. Horrific. Coming out of a timeout and then having to take a delay game. And then we missed the extra point on top of that. So that was all on me.
I wish I had all the answers and I'd give them to you. I don't know the answers other than that you're going to keep swinging and keep working together.
Obviously, if we knew the answer, we'd be doing it.
How do you find answers? You go to work, and that's we're going to go back to work. I don't mean to be redundant in coach speak, but there's nothing else I can tell you.
Honestly, when it's December, everything kind of feels like a playoff game.
Hell yeah, man! It's awesome, dude. We got great fans here. You know, every time we travel, man, they show up, show out.
Once it's December, I mean, it's go time.
Yeah, dude. I mean, that's why I wear short shorts. I mean, them legs, bro. Like, phew.
Last week was last week. This week was this week. Next week will be next week.
Damn right.
I think Minshew is a bit of an airhead. And it's okay.
He is so Uncle Rico.
I also need to know who was advocating for good hygiene nonsensically. Yes. As
well,
an
saying?
An
it was
aside.
Frank Reich, I believe.
Frank Reich. Yeah. He's like, we have a saying. And then there's eight things that are part of the saying, including being good at hygiene.
How about Fangs loving that that 11-minute drive that produced 0 points?
I thought that was Fangs, too, but it was not Fangs.
It was Fangs.
Yes!
Oh,
was it? Oh, because I thought it was that Rob Bisaccia dude who...
That was scoreboard watching.
Really good job, Witty. For your maiden voyage on a useless sound montage, that was quite good.
How did you feel about it, Whittingham? How did you feel about going into the dungeon where that crud resides? How many hours did you spend slogging through it?
A couple hours. Last night, I sent some of it to Chris and Roy, and then I got to cutting, and I kind of was addicted to it by the end. I was like, I really want to get to this useless stuff. I left one on the cutting room floor. I labeled it in my computer as Matthew Stafford says absolutely nothing. And it was like, and you're like, Eureka! Fantastic! I love the fact that he said absolutely nothing. It's the complete opposite way that I've ever cut sound.
It is. Can you also, by the way, you were reading during the break, you were simply reading about Al Golden, the details about the manual that Al Golden put in front of the staff or in front of the people making the hire at the University of Miami to convince them that Al Golden was the future at UM, that their future was golden.
I love this because I imagine you've sat in these interviews before, Dan, which is the first time the new head coach sits down with the local columnist, and the local columnist has to mine for an anecdote. And so here it is. On the desk, the 300-page spiral-bound book he took to his interview with Miami Athletic Director Kirby Hocutt. The book is printed in Miami's colors, says deserve victory on the cover, and under that, the pillars of performance with a picture of the Greek Parthenon. On the pillar are words like discipline and work.
That is how Al Golden got hired, and he gave great coach. He gave great press conference. You could absolutely fool Stugatz for the rest of time just with someone who looks the part as a coach.
No doubt. Unfortunately, one of those pillars also said Mark D'Onofrio.
Stugatz was talking about how, and we've talked about this before, how it is that Pat Riley gives off a presidential that Joe Philbin does not before you've gotten to the result. But Cristobal is stretched out weight room Manny Diaz. Like, he's not, he's stretched out, he's thicker, he's bigger, he looks more like football than Manny Diaz.
No question.
For sure.
But I would also tell you, like, Marcus Freeman, Notre Dame is very excited about that, and he's a handsome guy, and he gives off great coach, and his press conference was fantastic. But if he looked like, take away the last name, if he looked like Steve Belichick, you would not be nearly as excited for your new head coach at Notre Dame. You wouldn't.
Put it on the poll, please, Chris Cody. Would you hire someone with Bill Belichick's resume if they looked like Steve Belichick?
Just make him Steve.
That game last night. What did you call it, Chris Cody, when I walked in here today by way of telling, saying hello to me? He said something along the lines of the classic game where you can't tell shit about either team, but we're just going to have some fun like out there
classic,
at the top of the standings.
You don't learn shit, but let's just have some fun.
It's just, and do you think that was fun for Belichick throwing the ball three times in that game?
I enjoyed watching that game. I love it when there's a pitch to a running back and you don't know if he's going to catch the ball or not.
That game meant something to Belichick from this standpoint, and he was so happy afterwards. He was hugging his son. He was hugging his head coaches. The reaction to winning that game was unlike any reaction I've seen from Belichick, and that includes after he went Super Bowls.
This is what I wanted to ask you guys, because I do believe that you've heard me talk before about what a great frustration it must be to the average coach to be a control freak, and then things start, and you don't actually have much of the control. You control your timeouts and some of the strategy, but how guys execute, you could practice all week, and it must be an exasperation to be a control freak who doesn't have that much control. But Belichick got to control it last night.
Yes.
Like, he got to play the game that he's wanted to play all his life, where we could watch him win and we're like, wow, this is all just smarts and maneuvering, and this is, I'm not going to put my quarterback in a bad position. I'm going to quote generals after the game saying, you just keep attacking weaknesses. It's the art of war.
With this New England Patriot team in particular, everyone likes to heap praise upon Bill Belichick. And that was happening again last night. That is a coaching victory. Well, Bill's coach Sean McDermott issues pause.
Let's not give more credit than we need to give credit to Bill Belichick in this one. It was, whether it's Bill or anybody else, they beat us, right? But you sit here and you tell me, when we start with the average starting field position of the 40-yard line and he starts with the 23-yard line, and I'm rounding up in both cases, and we were 1-for-4 in the red zone, and they're 0-for-1 in the red zone, you give me that ahead of time, I'm saying I like my chances. So it's not, I don't think, with all due respect, it's not a Bill Belichick type thing. It's, what are you doing with the opportunities you got? We turned the ball over at the plus 30-some yard line, sloppy football. I'm very comfortable in that situation.
So there you have it. It's not a Bill Belichick is great thing. It's a Sean McDermott suck last night thing.
Sean McDermott sounds like a sore loser there, by the way. Bill Belichick right now is the NFL coach of the year. It's amazing what he's done with a rookie quarterback. And last night, in hiding, insulating the rookie quarterback, it's brilliant. Nobody expected, this was supposed to be Buffalo's time. Nobody expected the Patriots, after one down year, to be this team.
Well, that's how you win coach of the year. Nobody expected. Just start
that's
right. there.
Like, zero expectations, yes.
What he's saying is that they won the field position battle. They got into the red zone more. So, like, they screwed up at crucial times, but overall, like, they played better.
Isn't that a mark of good coaching, though?
Yep. I don't think so.
I would say that this is
the it's more random when you get in the red. Like, you know, if we played that game again tonight, the Bills might do better in the red zone.
He's blaming his players there, though, is what he's doing.
I think he is, actually. Yeah. He's calling out his players.
Call like, better red zone plays that work.
I mean, you could do that argument with every play. Like, so every touchdown is the coach's call?
Yes.
Like, it's a thing. It's a 50-50 thing at least, right? I mean, it's...
Well, that math isn't accurate, but McDermott is saying there, hey, let's not make it about... Because Belichick is that happy because he's looking around and is like...
He beat the Bills.
Well, yes, he's in first place. Look at how we won. We won on the road. Division games still matter. And look at how we won. If you're going to do... They asked McDermott after the game about credit. And he's like, let's not make it a credit Belichick thing, which is exactly what we will do when a Belichick wins and we can't credit the quarterback, which we couldn't do last night because he didn't let the quarterback do anything.
How about we credit the defense or the offensive line?
Stugatz came in here accurately when he said, I could have played Mac Jones's position last night.
I could have. I mean, I feel like I was more active than Mac Jones was last night. I did more. I walked my dog around the block. That's like a mile. I mean, I moved more than Mac Jones did last night. But I wonder how Mac Jones experiences that. I do wonder. Like, Bill Belichick hit his quarterback for a night.
Well, but it's the weather forced it. It's not because he doesn't trust his quarterback. He didn't trust the elements. I can't blame him for not trusting the elements. But I'm with Chris Cody on this portion of it. And I'm glad to hear a coach speak honestly on, man, even though it's going to be headlines, why don't you give Belichick credit? Give him more credit. You're only giving him 3% credit. And you need to give him 96% credit, when that's not how these people tend to function, even though credit seeking is a human thing. I am with Chris on this part of it, and you've got to score and you've got to win the game, but that could have been a 31-14 game if the Bills had done some of what they would normally do by probabilities in the red zone.
If Knox could catch the
that's correct
flipping ball, that's, I almost said correct. The F word, I'm going to say it. If he can only catch the ball.
Yeah, the Bills, huh?
Then you said it. You didn't say it, and then you said flipping.
I realized I could.
You got caught up in
the
air.
I didn't want to realize I could, so I did.
Belichick obviously caught wind of what McDermott said, because on his morning show on WEEI this morning, they asked him how he was feeling, and he said he felt run down. And the host started cracking up. It was a total shock.
I had Dawson Knox over yards. 29 yards. I booked that bet before
storm.
I saw how bad the weather was. But I'm like, I think it was lowered because of that. 29
yards. Last night was the classic. You got to check the weather before you put bets in.
I saw some guy hit a parlay. It was like $50 to win $20,000. It was all the unders. It was literally the under on like every single prop you could have done, and he hit it.
Yeah, exactly. That was a classic under game. 50-mile-per-hour gusts. Nah, man, nobody's going to score.
The pictures of the stadium after the game looked post-apocalyptic. It looked terrifying to leave that stadium.
Did you see the clip of Booger McFarland being knocked over by the wind pregame? The ESPN pregame show, they were all on these like bar stools, and the gust blew Adam Schefter off his chair. But even Booger McFarland like had to catch himself. It was insane.
So that is the game that you get last night, as the Patriots are again at the top of the standings. And you also heard after the game, Stugatz, I think
I thought it was curious that Sean McDermott omitted in his stats that he rattled off 222 rushing yards from New England.
Right.
That is kind of the whole deal.
When you know what's coming.
When it became pretty apparent, they started the game with 10 runs. I understand being confused at the start of the game because you're still expecting them to pass. Well, they're not going to be the Air Force offense, are they? They're going to pass, and they just keep handing it off and handing it off and handing it off. But after the games, Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde, the Bills safeties, were being asked about whether they were embarrassed about that, Mike. That stat of just, they didn't have to throw, they just kept running at you. And both of them said in a irritated and sort of threatening fashion, I'm going to remember that.
Are good quotes.
We're going to remember that, which is what you do when you've been embarrassed.
Right. Did he remember? Mean, yeah. We're going to remember the guy who asked the question, or we're going to remember the Patriots?
No, he meant the question. He didn't like the question of they were both like, what kind of question is that? Are we embarrassed by this? They were mad at the questioner, not at the performance. Or, well, actually, they were probably mad at the performance and took it out on the questioner.
Right, exactly.
But it is embarrassing, is it not? It is embarrassing for the Bills to lose that way to that team at home in the division playing, you know, 20 years the Patriots have won that game on you. 20 years. You went 17 years without making the playoffs in Buffalo. You have a quarterback. Josh Allen is a quarterback who puts you in games, and here the Buffalo Bills find themselves again in the standings a year behind. Again, they find themselves in the standings behind the New England Patriots that have dominated that division for two decades.
That's an excellent point by Stu Gatz. This was supposed to be Buffalo's time, not just in that division, but in the AFC, especially early on when they went into Arrowhead and beat up the Kansas City Chiefs. This is a real step back for Sean McDermott and that Bills program.
They're flirting with not making the playoffs right now. I mean, they really are.
But can we just make last night, though? Do we have to make it mean something? Can it just be random ball in the snow?
Well, does it mean something for the AFC playoff chase.
No, I don't mean in terms of stakes. Obviously.
In terms of evaluation.
I'm talking about measurements. Yeah, obviously, in terms of stakes, it was an enormous game. But can we say that we can't say this is supposed to be the years for the Bills and, hey, go win in a crazy snowstorm that's blowing Booger McFarland off. You can't make any assessments off that game.
I would say, I saw a tweet floating around last night from Mac Jones saying that he had never been in the snow. This is like 4 or 5 years ago. So this is a guy, if we learned anything, maybe we learned that Mac Jones won't be a guy that's great in cold weather games. Maybe that's the only thing we learned.
But maybe you can extrapolate, that's a concern as the season wears on. But anytime you have two teams that are kind of close to each other, which I think entering that game we did, and you introduce 50-mile-per-hour gusts, I think you're kind of playing a little random ball at that point, and who's better at executing what works well in this game comes into play.
But to McDermott's point, Dan, I think that's what he was trying to say. Hey, we had plenty of opportunities. We let that game get away, and they did. They drove down the length of the field plenty of times, and they turned it over just about every time.
But weird things happen in 50-mile-an-hour winds. I just don't know how many extrapolations. Maybe you can make an extrapolation if the Patriots have to see Buffalo again down the line, they're certainly not going to be afraid to run against them. Or Belichick's telling you after the game, he's saying flatly, in the art of war, you attack weaknesses. So what was he saying? Their weakness is going to be, I'm going to be able to run on them. I'm going to keep trying to run on them. I'm going to feel good about my chances. An offensive linemen tell you this all the time. When a coach keeps calling running plays and they're physically handling another team in a way that makes them feel good about football, it's the football offensive linemen most want to play. They don't want to actually be trying to block Myles Garrett coming around the edge. They want to trample. Yeah. They want to eat all week. They want to just shovel bowls of cereal in their face and get out their Sunday, start farting and just pushing straight ahead and blocking. Maybe you can take that from, hey, the team that we've been playing in the division who wants our division. It's kind of like what happened with Alabama and Georgia. Not yet. Not now.
Right.
Not yet. Not your time yet. It's not just that the Patriots beat them. They beat them with physical football. They beat them with, here's what's coming the entire game, and we're going to beat you anyway. But I don't think that you can make any measurement extrapolations off of that. You just sort of throw up your hands and say, either one of those teams could have ended up winning by 3 points if something different happens in the snow.
I think, but you can say that about 90% of NFL results. In this case, I think the weather is not an excuse. You're talking about a December game between two teams from the Northeast who play outdoors, who are not used to this extreme in weather, but used to adverse conditions. I think it was a perfect barometer that New England is still the king.
It was just surprising because the Bills have given up 107 yards on the ground per game this year. It was a lot less headed into last night. Okay, so they're factoring in last night. They were really good against the rush. And to have a team that is rushing the ball every single play and you know it's coming and not being able to stop it, that was a bit jarring.
But I wouldn't say not be able to stop it. They scored 14 points. They had the ball and they were able to run the ball. I can't believe you're saying here, Cody, you think this is... I'm sitting here saying you can't measure off of that thing and you're saying perfect extrapolation.
Right.
What extrapolation are you making from that?
The extrapolation I'm making is that these are two very good defenses, but one's better than the other one. Buffalo, it isn't just Josh Allen. Buffalo's been winning with defense. Last night, and in transparency, I didn't watch the game. I was at a concert. I watched the last 3 minutes. But Last night, they win with defense. New England is great on defense. And that's accurate. Defense doesn't care about the weather. The passing game does. Defense doesn't give a shit about the weather. Defense excels in that kind of weather.
Put it on the poll, Chris. Does defense give a shit about the weather?
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Don Levitard.
Enough with the DJ Khaled collaborations with people that are hot right now. Yeah. We want to see DJ Khaled work with some of the great singers of yesteryear. Can you imagine how great it would be if DJ Khaled started bringing out special guests onto the stage, and one of them was Bryan Adams? Yeah. Everyone, it's Liza Minnelli.
Stugatz.
Barbara Streisand. Yeah. Elton John, it's your song. Andrea Bocelli. Another one. Tony Bennett. Frankie Avalon. Thomas Dolby is blinding you with science.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
What concert you go to just then?
Well, as if there was any doubt about how old I am, we went to see a twin bill between the Temptations and the Four Tops.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Seminole Coconut great. Creek? I mean.
No, it was at the Broward Center of the Performing Arts. By the way, they're both four-man groups right now. There's one remaining original top and one remaining original temp for those keeping score at home. They're both in their 80s. The 80-year-old temp looks fantastic. From where I was sitting, he looked like he was about 60. He was great. But what an old crowd. My wife and I felt like spring chickens in that audience. We were pecking around like spring chickens. Everybody looked like they were 90. I only looked like I was 80, so I had a leg up. Great concert. Fantastic show.
You found a place where there are people older than you.
That's what I do now. That's why I went to the Monkees concert a couple of months ago. Can I tell you, you get to be my age, you look for old crowds to make you feel better. And they're harder and harder to find, by the way. That kind of thing.
I gotta pay up. Anytime he invokes some Monkees, he does that hey with a hey hey.
Oh yeah.
Every time he does it. Every time. Yes. I want more information about that. That is, it is a really fossilized concert that,
yeah, it was.
That makes me a little sad the way that you described not just the audience, but that one of the temps and one of the tops is holding on to what remains of their living name,
right,
by touring the country and still giving people like you a chance for nostalgia when it's not at all the group that you are going to see. Like, that it's no longer that group.
Yeah, I mean, they still do the hits, and they sound a little bit like what you'd hear on the radio. But it was interesting because I think of that as a twin bill. I said to my wife on the way, I think the Four Tops are as big as the Temptations were. But the Temptations were clearly the lead act, and the Four Tops were the opening act. And you saw that during the performance because the Four Tops were a little bit haphazard, whereas the Temptations were in sync. Their moves on stage were in sync. They were just a better group at this point.
Yeah, it feels like these groups are like, you know, like the Dodgers and the Giants, you know, like the rivals, like the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and that sort of thing. Like, I feel like there's a rivalry there.
They shouldn't have been touring together. They should be sworn enemies through the Beyond. They should be fighting throughout the Beyond.
Yeah, that's right. One of them should be at the James L. Knight Center. The other one should be at the Brown Center.
See who sells more tickets, right?
Yeah,
you're
dueling tickets.
Yeah, you know what? If I was in charge of that show, I would have had them combined on stage for one song at the very end. I would have. It would have been great. You know, I need to be the guy who, you know, I'm an idea guy. I'm a can-do guy, and I need to be the guy in charge of staging that concert.
You're both? I think the idea guys hand it off to the can-do guys.
Right. Here's the idea. Go execute it.
You can't be both. I do both.
You can't be both.
Yeah,
both. You don't do either, actually.
I do both.
Where's your back in my day?
Well, it's on vacation this week.
Okay, you don't do
concert.
Both. You're not a can-do guy. You get I ask you to do things and you don't do them.
Like, you're not, at a twin bill.
You're not. I mean, you don't get to describe yourself as a can-do guy.
Sugar pie, honey bunch. You know that I love you.
Attaboy.
Can't help myself. Everybody.
All right. I got you and nobody else.
Come and you go. Come and you go. All right.
It's how he distracts you from not doing his work.
Well, you know, back in my days on vacation. I deserve a vacation.
You said last week you'd have one this week.
Well, I'm on vacation. I was called in yesterday to write a crystal ball column. Otherwise, I'm on vacation all week. You know,
This has nothing to do with the Herald.
Well, it's very nice of you to show up on vacation. Well, I'm being serious.
Yeah,
yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're here.
So you're presently on vacation right
now.
Yeah, thank you, Greg.
You're welcome. Yeah.
You haven't been an idea guy since Pope Fest that we did with Edwin Pope.
And then I was a can-do guy.
Yeah.
I could use you being the can-do guy.
You are neither an I-do guy nor a can-do guy. You are not, I don't know what kind of guy you are. You're neither of these things, though. You're not an idea guy. You're not a can-do guy.
He's just a guy.
You know, how can you say that?
I come up with ideas. If I think they need delegating, I delegate.
Greg,
if I want to handle it myself,
Greg,
I handle it.
You are asked around here to come up with one idea a week. You can't do it. One idea a week for
vacation.
Back in my day. You keep getting asked to do it. You can't do it. That is neither an idea guy nor a can-do guy. That's a guy who consistently skips back in my day.
Well, look, sometimes it's a quality control issue, but this time it's a vacation issue. Back in my day, picture back in my day in a chaise lounge, maybe in a hammock with its feet up, with a pina colada in his hand, back in my day is on vacation. We're in Hawaii right now, mentally.
This is...
If you like pina coladas. Making love in the sand. What is that last line? Making love in the sand. Who does
in
that?
The rain.
Getting lost in the rain.
Oh, yeah, in the rain. Yeah, you're right.
Why are you singing the pina colada song?
Well, I referenced pina colada. Back in my day, had a pina colada in its hand. Right.
Yeah, that's not Motown.
In the hammock.
Stay with them, Dan.
Oh, yeah. Anything but Motown.
Is that a happy song or a sad song?
It wants to be a little of both. It's a message song, you know? It's about a couple falling apart, and they find each other through like a want ad or something.
Yeah, I know.
It's a bizarre song.
I know, but is it? Thank you for the recap. But I know what I didn't ask you whether it was a bizarre song. I asked you whether it was a happy. You got to choose one: happy song or sad song.
I would say sad song.
They're about to cheat on each other, Greg.
Well, that's what's sad about it,
Greg. I saw last night.
Everybody plays the fool
sometimes.
Exactly.
This made me think of you, Greg, because we have reached the point in Bruce Willis's career, and this is the only kind of work that he can get.
I have another Gooding fact off to the side.
Oh, great.
Oh, nice.
On the side. Yes,
yeah,
great.
Off to the side.
Quick aside.
Yeah. Cuba Gooding had another son, Omar Gooding, who was the running back in the short-lived ESPN show Playmakers.
And don't forget about Wild and Crazy Kids.
Wild and Crazy Kids.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Two episodes, right, I think, for Playmakers?
No.
It's
the entire season. It had a cliffhanger.
Whole season, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That right there, I believe that was a skipper call, or was that might have been pre-Skipper. That might have been Mark Shapiro at ESPN, but I would say that that was where ESPN, right there, Playmakers, is where ESPN could have decided, do we want to be like a real, real content company? Not just sort of these sports infomercials and a lot of shows that look the same, but scripted content. Do we want to branch out? They could have made a decision right there with Disney's backing at the height of what ESPN was. And the NFL didn't want to do Playmakers because Playmakers had drugs in it and sex in it, and they didn't want one of their partners depicting football that way. And so Playmakers just went away, but it was at least popular in part because it depicted football that way. And that right there you can cite as a symbolic point where ESPN made some decisions as a content company. No, we're not going to really go all in on the making of different stuff and cool stuff. We're just going to stay a company that does it with games. But the reason I thought of you with this Bruce Willis movie is because every time I now do a fun scroll through iTunes, and I don't know how much of the audience's streaming habits have changed or how quickly they have changed, or if you've even noticed the different way that you watch television than you used to before. But I used to take great delight in pouring through iTunes for new movies, and that changed during the pandemic because there weren't very many of them there. They're all coming back now. All of Hollywood and the content golden age is coming back to work, and so now you see some of these movies that have been produced during the pandemic, during a strained content time. Things are getting a little more back to normal. You can imagine what Ethan Hawke is like after 2 years of crazy, when he was already a little bit crazy, and now he's going to make a movie where he's extra Ethan Hawke crazy. But I love to scroll through the previews. And the last, I don't know, 5 years that I've been doing it, Bruce Willis is always in the same movie. It's aging action star who's aged out of Liam Neeson's age and The Rock. They're all over 50, but Bruce Willis is the oldest of them. And so I thought of Stugatz with one part of it, which was the description of the movie. Serving a life sentence for a crime he didn't commit, ex-cop Thomas Malone is offered a chance at freedom if he can hunt other humans on a remote island.
Oh, that will get me every time.
All hell breaks loose.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
It's a must-see.
When Malone arrives.
Great name, Malone.
Yeah, it is.
And this is not quite as epic a movie as Ridley Scott doing The Last Duel with Lena Dunham's creepy boyfriend from Girls, Adam Driver, and Matt Damon. And Ben Affleck. That's now...
That's how they unretired from screenwriting together. That was their big return after Good Will Hunting.
1400s, Last Duel, Damon against Adam Driver, yeah, with Ben Affleck Ridley Scott.
Yeah, Ridley Scott just started blaming people on their phones after that bombed at the box office, as opposed to the pandemic.
But it's not this. It's Bruce Willis, and the villain Stugatz says, and the reason I thought of Cody is because of how lazy it's gotten.
Thank you.
The villain says,
appreciate that.
This is the villain. I win. It's all I do. That's the villain in the preview. And then Bruce Willis is asked if he's good, and this is what he says. This is the dialogue. I'm better than good. I'm bacon and eggs on Sunday morning.
What a great line.
Your movie.
It. Yeah.
Oh, this is good, though. This is live for an Academy Award.
This is your movie. And he's sort of staring over. I think it's the same camera angle as when he's holding in Die Hard the machine gun while looking out of Nakatomi Plaza. I think it's the same. But he's looking over the camera and he's like, I'm better than good, standing over his fallen prey. I'm bacon and eggs on Sunday morning.
Like when you said, welcome to the party, pal. That angle?
Yes, it's that. But this is all he's doing. And what I want to ask you guys, and Greg Cody was in a theater for the first time recently to see Adam McKay's movie since when? What's that movie? When's the last time you
were in Swing Vote?
Well,
actually, I saw Rocket Man, the Elton John movie, so I have seen that since Swing Vote, but I never go to a theater.
The movie only came out 3 years ago, so thank you.
There you go.
Chris, your dad was surprised the other day that the theater had a bar, correct? He thought you were in the wrong place because it had a bar.
He's like, wow, theaters have changed since the last time I went.
It was unbelievable. They had big cushioned seats. You know, I felt like I was in a living room. A living room better than mine, by the way. I've never sat in a seat like that. It was luxurious. I sank into the seat. You couldn't even see me during the movie because the chair was so big and I was sinking.
You bought two before luxurious. It started, didn't you?
Did what now?
Like you walked to the seat with two. I just like imagining you doing that.
No, I drank a Diet Coke during the movie.
Really? I had a nice Bordeaux.
Did you?
Yeah.
Wow. You didn't know you were in the right place because there was a bar at the theater?
Right. I had no idea. I walked up with McGill and his wife. We got there at the same time, and they had to tell me, yeah, this is the entrance to the movie theater because all I saw was a big bar. And I'm like, this movie theater?
I want to say to you, I got to think, though, that Bruce Willis, just so that you guys understand this, he's about Greg's age, is he not? Bruce Willis.
I believe so,
Greg Cody was in a crowd last night.
Impossible.
You don't think that Bruce Willis is about 65 years old?
66.
There you go. We're brethren. Simpatico.
I now want you to imagine Greg Cody as an action star.
I could be an action star.
You should shave your head.
And it's getting there on its own.
Would you like to? I have an idea.
No, I really wouldn't. I am cut out to be an action star, by the way.
What?
I say I'm cut out to be an action star.
I heard what you said.
I just sometimes need the right script, you know?
That's been the holdup?
Yes. Nobody's presented me with the right script.
The guy who wheezes to climb up one flight of stairs is going to be an action star.
That's all for show.
You're an idea guy, though.
Thank you.
Can you read that bit of dialogue? I'm better than bacon and eggs.
Damn
on a
right
Sunday.
I can.
Yeah. Can you do it without wheezing?
Yeah.
All right.
Good. I'm better than bacon and eggs on a Sunday.
Oh, I nailed it.
It wasn't convincing in any way.
With a side of whole wheat toast. That's what I would add.
Your voice gave out on toast.
As a flourish.
The thing that I was asking you guys, though, is at any point are we going to notice that all our action stars are over 50 and it's a little ridiculous?
Who is the youngest action star right now?
Probably Chris Pratt.
He's an action star?
So they're either from The Office or over 50? Parks and Rec, excuse me.
Wow.
I think of him as just a movie star. Is he really an action star?
He's a movie
star.
He's
been in Guardians of the Galaxy. He's an action star?
He's doing a lot of action movies.
Is Ryan Reynolds an action star?
I think so. But he's the comedic relief. He was just in Red Notice with Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Maybe that's the thing. When you're younger, you're just an overall star. And as you get older, it's like, this is all I have kind of thing. Because Bruce Willis is not going to be the lead in like a main.
But Ryan Reynolds wouldn't want to be considered just an action star. He's doing it as Deadpool with a wink.
Don't put him in a box.
Is Renner an action star?
I would think Chris Pratt would say the same thing. No. Not just an action star.
No?
No. Jeremy Renner's not an action star. He occasionally appears as Hawkeye, but all the other roles are not.
Well, he took
movies.
The Bourne money, too, so I think that's why Stugatz is doing that. Renner got in there after.
He was in the Mission Impossible movies. I'm not a big Bourne franchise fan, so I don't know if he's in the Bourne franchise.
Wasn't he the Bourne after Bourne? Wasn't he after? They still needed to keep capitalizing on it. Matt Damon left because he said, I was tired of filming movies where I'm just running around and there's no script. They're just filming me running around cities. I don't even know what we're doing anymore. He gets out of there. I thought Renner replaced Bourne. Did he not?
He was in the Bourne Legacy, yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I know he was in Mission Impossible, too, but he wasn't playing like an action role there. He was more like brains of the operation. More like the idea guy, not the can-do guy.
Could you call the Hurt Locker a war drama, or could you call it an action movie?
That's not an action.
Yeah, you defuse bombs in it.
Drama.
Yeah. Very tense.
Great movie.
There.
The Rock is 49.
Greg Cody, if you were an idea guy and a can-do guy, you guys realize how much fun you guys could have with some commercials or trying to make a trailer of Greg Cody action star? Like, do you realize if you had either the idea or the can-do of it, that is something that could be put together and our audience would enjoy, you wheezing up a set of stairs as an action star?
Greg Cody is Old Man Winter. Rated R.
Right. Nothing wrong with that.
Greg Cody is can't-do.
Can't do. You know, action star, that's the low rung of acting, is to be an action figure. But I would be willing to do that. I'm well suited. I've been surprising people my whole life with my athleticism, and I'm not ready to stop yet. Show me the right script, I'm there for you. As long as the casting call is not at 8 a.m., because that's ridiculous.
Great.
Gotta start later.
Yeah. And you're not on vacation.
Thank you.
This Friday, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yeah! The Vandercoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. In theaters Friday. Rated R.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.